Welcome everyone to the third episode of Only Murders in the Writer's Room. I'll be your host, Denny Pivac, and it's crazy to think, for me at least, that it has been 30 years since the 1988 syndicated, highly underrated, strangely overlooked, but still enjoyably science fantastical series Superboy ended. Starring Gerard Christopher as the title character for the remaining three seasons, and John Newton for just the first, Stacey Haiduk as his love interest Lana Lane, Robert Levine as Perry White archetype C. Dennis Jackson, Peter J. Fernandez as Jimmy Olsen archetype Matt Ritter, Sherman Howard as Superboy's arch-nemesis Lex Luthor, and a whole bunch of other well-known television actors, Superboy was a big part of my childhood. Growing up during YouTube's startup phase, I found a few videos released on their site from episodes of Superboy. I didn't know what the site was at the time, nor did I know what the show was either. It wasn't until my 9th birthday when my parents got me the complete first season of Superboy on DVD. It wasn't that bad. The year after, my parents got me the second season, also on DVD. And then, several years after that, nothing. I just kind of grew out of the Superboy craze phase, but that didn't mean I forgot about the show entirely. Actually, far from it. Today's episode of Only Murders in the Writer's Room, or Omitwar for short, is going to be a special one, because I won't technically be recreating an already created story, but rather continuing it, similar to how I did for Halloween 5 in the previous episode. So, without further ado, spoiler alert to anyone who has yet to see the show, and let's begin. Superboy's fifth season premiere is titled People Skills Part 1, and begins with Lex Luthor taking the Bureau for Extra-Normal Matters hostage, leaving Clark vulnerable while trying to find a way to protect his fellow co-workers, and also without revealing his secret identity, Clark stumbles upon something even bigger. Meanwhile, Lana starts putting some pieces together and firmly believes, yet again in this series, she's done this countless other times, theorizing that Clark is Superboy. Once again, she theorizes that, again, Clark is Superboy. However, Lana isn't the only one who thinks so. Lex decides to put that theory to the test by sending a time bomb. The only way to stop it is for Superboy to appear in person and reveal his secret identity to Lex within the next hour, or the Bureau goes up in smoke. Ending on that cliffhanger, the next episode is titled People Skills Part 2. After discovering Superboy's true identity, Clark and Lana stop Luthor together. Now knowing who the Boy of Steel truly is, Lana still comes up with more questions than answers. One in particular is, why hasn't Superboy utilized his powers even more? Leading Clark to believe that Lana wishes to have some of that power herself. Sooner than later, Clark decides to share his powers with Lana, becoming the new Supergirl. The Boy and Girl of Steel team up to fight new threats. After a few weeks of hard work, Clark and Lana decide to take a break. They travel to Cancun, only to be greeted by an old friend, Metallo. He uses his newly acquired red kryptonite on Clark, which ends up messing with his mind and turning him into an evil version of himself yet again, like he was in Season 2. Now, Supergirl, aka Lana, must find a way to stop Clark from going any further. Meanwhile, Matt, Clark and Lois's co-worker, meets up with Clark and Lana's old friend, Andy McAllister, who was played by Eileen Mitchell Smith in the show's second season. And then he returned around the Season 3, an episode titled, I think it was Movie Magic, but I'm not quite sure. Oh, and also, the actor who played Metallo was named Michael Callan. He was a returning or recurring guest star between seasons 2 and 4. Anyways, the two have been in correspondence ever since hearing about an all-new vigilante that's protecting the streets of Capital City at night, going by the codename The Hood. Matt and Andy wish to know more, but don't yet realize how dangerous that could be, for them at least. Eventually, Superboy confronts the Hood after observing his encounter with a couple of thugs. The Hood explains why he's come to Capital City and who he's really come for. It's Superboy. Now, an unimaginable rivalry has spurred, but an even more unimaginable friendship has too, between the two heroes' alter egos, Clark Kent and Oliver Queen. Meanwhile, Matt and Lana think that General Swan, who is played by Jim McDonald in the show's second and fourth season, is planning to create some kind of weapon that is capable of destroying Superboy. After that, Superboy and the Hood, or as Clark has written him in the newspaper, the Green Arrow, have decided to quote-unquote patch things up. The two are now working side by side, and Green Arrow believes it's time to reveal each other's secret identities, as a means to trust each other more. As they start to explain to each other who they really are, they don't notice a little drone spying on them from above. The drone's receiver picked up everything from Superboy and Green Arrow's conversation and returns directly to Swan. General Swan, of course, not an actual, you know, Swan bird. Now, knowing the true identity of Superboy and Arrow, General Swan decides to blackmail them into performing something highly illegal, not yet revealed until later into the series. A few days later, Clark and Lana go on a double date with Oliver and Zatanna, a magician. However, Lana soon finds out that Clark, Oliver, and Zatanna have been manipulated by Swan to perform a rather dangerous mission. Knowing this, Lana threatens General Swan, causing a hatred between the military and superheroes. Superboy, Green Arrow, and Zatanna must find a way to stop this before it spirals into an all-out metahuman war. Meanwhile, Matt and Andy discover the General's secret weapon, Kryptonite Kid, a villain who was played by Jay Underwood in the show's fourth season. After the battle between the military and superheroes, and after Superman blackmails Swan, now knowing about his metahuman torture chamber, Mike Walker, aka Kryptonite Kid, escapes General Swan's headquarters, looking three times older than he was before. Apparently, the kryptonite that was fused into Mike's bloodstream mixed with a couple of more chemicals and caused rapid aging. Not only will Mike die in a matter of days, but the energy he contains may leak, causing a nuclear disaster. Meanwhile, Clark contemplates about getting his powers back from Lana. Unfortunately, Lana learns about Clark's contemplations, and if I mispronounce nuclear, I am sorry, that's a word I really have trouble with pronouncing on account of my lisp. Anyways, Lana takes it the wrong way, causing a verbal and physical, more so superpowered, fight between the two. This is initially what caused Supergirl to go dark, not yet revealed until further into the series. Feeling no longer like her actual self, Lana decides to claim an all-new identity. She isn't human. She isn't a hero. She must become someone else. She must become something else. Meanwhile, Clark discovers General Swan and his boss, Mr. Jackson, that's Clark's boss, of course, are related. He believes that the two may be conspiring against Superboy. Also, Oliver and Zatanna's relationship becomes increasingly intimate. General Swan then discovers an artifact with so much mystical power, called Vocho, that it could be enough to make Dark Supergirl as powerful as Superboy, maybe even more. The mid-season finale, titled The Name Game, begins with Andy taking some drugs his acting fans have tried too. But they aren't any ordinary drugs, they're actually for metahumans. If taken, Andy could turn into a metahuman himself, or something far worse. Meanwhile, Clark and Oliver travel to the Fortress of Solitude to inquire about some Kryptonian history, only to uncover an old enemy, Bizarro. Eventually, Dark Supergirl teams up with Bizarro, and the two start wreaking havoc upon Capital City. The two also start taking the same drugs that Annie has been taking, and slowly discover the true capability of them. Oliver also trains with Superboy's AI accomplice, Kellex, and learns the horrid truth of what could happen if Superboy, or God forbid another Kryptonian, were to turn evil. The mid-season premiere and or return acts as a filler, beginning with Superboy facing off against a metahuman heist couple. Cisco Ramon, aka Vibe, can teleport himself wherever, whenever, and Becky Sharp, aka Hazard, her powers are basically she can cause her own good luck for it to turn into bad luck for others. So basically, her power is, I guess, initiating bad luck onto others. They eventually are redeemed and become members of an all-new superhero team. Superboy then seeks Zatanna's help after Annie is magically trapped in an old family photo. This causes Superboy to relive a rather traumatic event that occurred the same time the photo was taken, aka the day he crash-landed on Earth and eventually discovered he was the last living Kryptonian. Matt grows more concerned about General Swan's supposed hiatus and calls upon the assistance of the Katia, the ancient tribe of flying warriors from Season 3. Meanwhile, Oliver and Satana go on a journey to seek out more metahumans for help. Clark eventually discovers fellow Schuster University alumni Rodan Fisher, aka the Thinker, isn't all he says he is. Rodan has kept his true identity hidden all along, immaculate intelligence. With it, he could take over the world. Instead, Clark Kent manages to persuade Rodan into helping them find a way to stop Dark Supergirl and Swan from destroying Capital City. The cliffhanger ending to that episode, aka these past few sentences, would be showing Dark Supergirl growing more corrupt, aka becoming something like Bizarro. The next episode is also filler, but wraps up a brief storyline, with Superboy putting an end to the metahuman drug ring before Andy or anyone else gets hurt. The episode after that revolves around Clark eavesdropping on his boss, Mr. Jackson, trying to talk some sense into Swan before he pushes Lana over the limit. Unfortunately, it's too late. Lana has officially become unstable. And yet again, though another episode in Season 5 would be a filler, this one I'm referring to specifically, it is a unique clip show. Containing the best moments from the best episodes of Superboy, there are brief moments showing the main characters recalling them. Superboy, Andy, and Matt also travel to Wyoming in the end as a cliffhanger to pick up someone they believe could help bring down Dark Supergirl, aka Lex Luthor. Now relying on Luthor to bring Dark Supergirl down, Superboy and Lex must put their differences aside to do so. But how can they when it was Superboy who caused Lana to go berserk and abuse her power? Two men, one love interest, aka Lana Lang, because both loved her at some point in Season 1, and over 5 billion lives hanging in the balance. I mention over 5 billion lives because that was how many approximately were on Earth in 1992. Unfortunately, Lex escapes from Superboy's quote-unquote evil clutches and decides to side with Swan. However, since her last encounter with both Luthor and Swan, Dark Supergirl decides to split and assemble her own team. She flies to Capital City's penitentiary and frees Superboy's old enemies. Andy and Rodan work together and manage to locate General Swan's new headquarters. They decide to steal the magical artifact known as Vocho from Swan. When he returns to his headquarters and finds the two intruders, he decides to put them through a lie detector test. If they lie, they die. Meanwhile, Oliver and Satana return from their travels to Capital City with superheroes and much stories to tell.
So, just a heads up, I had to change recording locations. So, sorry to anyone who's hearing this, and if it sounds irritating or bad, the location isn't preferably what I usually record in, my recording booth per se, but I had to do it for convenience. So, hopefully I don't have to change anymore, and this will be the remaining sound quality. So, let's continue where we left off. So a particular story that Oliver and Zatanna tell Superboy about is a forensic scientist who acquired the power of speed. He calls himself the Flash, but to many others, he's known as Barry Allen. Oliver also explains how they teamed up to defeat a peculiar polka-dotted man. A reference to, of course, the DC Comics villain Polka-Dot Man. After that, Toyman, aka Season 2 alumni Knick-Knack, played by Gilbert Godfrey, and Mr. Mitzik Pitalik arrive in Capital City to have some quote-unquote fun with Superboy. However, Toyman decides to combine powers with Mr. Mitzik Pitalik, and gosh, that is a really hard word or name to pronounce. And forgot to mention, Mr. Mitzik Pitalik, played by Michael J. Pollard, and then after that, Brainiac is resurrected, incidentally, through Kellex. So now, not only have Toyman and Mr. Mitzik Pitalik, still hard to pronounce, combined powers, but now they've become the one and only Toy Master, and Brainiac has combined powers with Toy Master. So now they become this unbelievable, immaculate AI weapon or warrior, however you want to call it. I just call it Brainiac because, you know, that's his name, whatnot, but like I could have called it, you know, maybe Master Brainiac or Brainiac 2.0. I don't know, I just thought of Brainiac. I didn't think of Brainiac on this, but I just thought, keep Brainiac because that's how he's known throughout the comics, and Brainiac 5 is more of an anti-hero. He's more of a good guy rather than a bad guy, but whatever. So, wait, where did I leave off? So Brainiac discovers some hidden power below the waters of Capital City, a city of its own called Atlantis. This is the introduction, of course, famous Atlantean superhero Aquaman. Superman must combine forces with this Atlantean, who does not take kindly to strangers, or it could mean the end of both of their worlds. Though this episode acts as a rather lackluster fifth-season finale, there is a post-credits scene revealing that after Superboy trapped Brainiac in the Phantom Zone, the same place where Superboy's ancestors trapped General Zod, Brainiac's cell collides with General Zod's, who is a future enemy of Superboy. And with that being, General Zod and his crew, and Brainiac included, escape their so-called prisons, or glass mirrors. And Zod famously quotes, maybe not famously, but he does quote Jesse Eisenberg's last line from Joss Whedon's Justice League. I won't spoil it for anyone, but for General Zod to be delivering this line instead of Jesse's character would probably make every DC fan, maybe even every comic book fan, and pardon my French, all of them would probably fangasm. So, what do you think of my theorized version of Superboy Season 5? Would you have preferred Lana stay an ally instead of an enemy? Should General Swan have been entirely swapped out for a more popular government-affiliated antagonist from the comics like General Eiling or Amanda Waller? Should the Thinker have been turned into an ally instead of an enemy? If you like, you can express similar opinions to me through my Instagram account at denny.pivac, or pronounced pivach, but it's spelled D-E-N-I, period, P-I-V-A-C. No capitalization, no letters, they're letters. What am I talking about? No spaces, I mean. And with that bunch of mistakes, now we go on to the sixth season premiere, which would have been titled, or at least I titled, Perfect Dangers, homage or parody to the sitcom titled Perfect Strangers. Superboy is getting distracted by accidents happening all over Capital City, caused by a group of people who have similar powers as him. It is revealed Lana has begun to share her gifts to the world. Also, Rodin and Zatanna perform a mindscape spell on Dark Supergirl, causing the three to be trapped within Dark Supergirl's mind. There, they must battle against something darker, her power within. Once Dark Supergirl's true plan is discovered, Superboy and his team have no choice but to put an end to Dark Supergirl and her army of superhumans. If Superboy does not kill his love, billions of others will be. Lois Lane arrives, and Superboy discovers Dark Supergirl was Swan's true secret weapon all along. Turns out, the magical artifact that Swan had recovered is able to manipulate reality. Swan wanted a reality where Superboy didn't exist. Unfortunately, the artifact wasn't powerful enough to make that happen. So, instead, Swan settled for the death of Superboy and all other superpowered beings. Manipulating Lana and many others, Swan almost got away with it. A few months have now passed, and Clark is still recuperating from Lana's unfortunate and untimely demise. He has also hung up the cape and takes a break at Superboy. His team of superheroes have all returned to their homes and decide to protect each of their city, or their hometowns, as a particular division. This is the start, or more so the indication, of the JLE, the Justice Legion of Earth. However, since Metropolis has no soups, Matt and Rodin decide to become one. Firestorm. Unfortunately, Firestorm proves to be quite the hothead, aka they create a third persona. The episode after that revolves around Clark going undercover as a builder to expose business tycoon Maxwell Lord as a criminal, but when Clark encounters Lois Lane, things start to heat up. Meanwhile, Firestorm is gaining quite the reputation. Rodin even scores a date with famous social media influencer Cat Grant. Now in the comics, Cat Grant works with Clark and Lois and the Daily Planet, but I decided to somewhat modernize this show, even though it is supposed to be taking place directly after or right where the previous four seasons had left off in the 90s. I don't know exactly how, like, the ethics or, I guess, what is it? Not physics. What would you call this? I guess logic of this would work around. But, like, I'm sure I could, like, work around maybe something. Maybe this takes place in the early 2000s. Because, like, social media was still pretty popular then. Like, there were still, like, what was it? Conspiracy theory websites. The internet was, like, all about texting and socializing and whatnot. So maybe early 2000s would have been a little bit more realistic. But anyways, Clark then goes to the Fortress of Solitude to figure out why Smallville has begun to disappear, like Krypton. Both Superboy's worlds and birthplaces could collide and disappear for an eternity. Fortunately, Superboy and Firestorm travel to Central City to ask for help, of course, from a friend of the Flash's, a man named Ray Palmer. Superboy learns that someone stole Ray's suit plans, and originally his plans were to shrink a suit down to molecular size, or nearly microscopic size, almost like an atom. And that could help with, you know, a bunch of medical needs and so much, like, other, I guess, innovative problems. Not maybe problems, like, it could create innovative solutions to immaculate problems. And, you know, it's like he's a pretty popular superhero currently in the CW-verse, or as once was once known, the Arrowverse. Anyways, so somehow someone stole Ray's suit plans and has found a way to shrink Smallville into a microscopically unimaginable size. Turns out, while Superboy and Dark Supergirl fought within the Fortress of Solitude, they smashed the city of Kandor. Now, in the comics, Kandor is a small city enclosed in a spherical case. Now, a civilian escaped from that said city, enlarged themselves to Superboy's size using some Kryptonian technology, and then discovered an even greater weapon that can shrink an entire city, similar to that one that did Kandor. Acting as both a Halloween special and filler, the next episode, Season 6, 7th episode, titled Who You Gonna Sprawl, as a reference to Who You Gonna Call from the famous line in Ghostbusters, revolves around Superboy and the heroic ghost Deadman. And the heroic ghost hero, I guess I could say, that would be two alternatives of hero, so I'm just gonna say the heroic ghost vigilante Deadman, teaming up to defeat zombies accidentally awoken by Zatanna. The episode after is also special and filler, or speller for short, you know, special and filler put together, revolving around Clark, Oliver, Matt, Andy, Sam, Lois, Zatanna, and Mandy, Andy's new girlfriend, enjoying a seemingly normal Thanksgiving with some shopping, macaroni and cheese, and Bizarro arriving with his new family. Lois also visits the Bureau of Extra-Normal Matters and is on time for a wine-tasting ceremony happening there. However, when she witnesses a few attendees collapsing after drinking some of the sampling wine, she decides to investigate who's poisoned the wine and why. An unrelated cliffhanger ending reveals General Swan grooming a starfish-looking alien. Then we move on to the two-parter mid-season finale titled Strokes of Death. Oliver's greatest enemy arrives in Capital City with an army of mercenaries by his side. His name? Slade Wilson, aka Deathstroke. His goal? Steal from all the riches, including Oliver himself, to blackmail more rags. However, when Slade's teen turns on him and uses his only child as ransom, an unlikely alliance must form between the Hood and the Assassin. The cliffhanger ending has Oliver shooting an arrow through Slade's good eye and Superboy watching in horror. Continuing right where the previous episode left off, Oliver and Superboy duke it out. Although they shared a moment, Oliver is not ready yet to forgive Slade. Instead, Oliver explains to Clark why he hates Slade so much. This is the origin story of an all-new Green Arrow. When Oliver's parents had enough of their son's troublemaking, they sent him to a military school. There, Oliver's drill instructor, Slade, trained him and grew to admire him. They explained their grievances, got closer with one another, and eventually became like a father and a son. Unfortunately, it all went downhill when Slade got addicted to drugs again and started taking an all-new drug called Mirakuru. It was supposed to help relieve people of PTSD, but unfortunately, it enhanced Slade's and also his strength. Slade increasingly grew more unstable until one day when Oliver's then-fiancée, Diana Drake, were enjoying a lovely evening at a cafe. Slade attacked the two. Oliver tried to knock Slade out, but he got badly bruised and Diana got killed. Since then, Oliver has never forgiven Slade for taking his first, and supposedly, true love. Without Oliver's knowing, the cliffhanger ending and or opening has Deathstroke helping Superboy enter Swan's headquarters. The two discover Swan and a bunch of other scientists experimenting on a rather large blue and magenta-colored starfish. When Starro, the starfish, literally opens up, its offspring go flying all around the lab and attach to Swan, General Swan's co-workers. So in the comics, Starro can reproduce, like, by himself, and he can shoot from his, I guess, suckers, which starfish are known to have, and from his suckers, he can shoot out a bunch of mini versions of him, or I'm assuming his offspring. So it's seen in a lot of adaptations, like in the recent Suicide Squad movie, and also in Robot Chicken's, if you can even call it that, adaptation of DC Comics. It's still really enjoyable. I have no disregard or like making any fun or like, you know, hating at Robot Chicken. Freaking love that show. That's like a show I fondly grew up with. Anyways, Superboy and Deathstroke must fight powerless now through an army of mind-controlled scientists and escape before Starro gets a hold of them. The reason that Deathstroke and Superboy are powerless is because General Swan's laboratory or headquarters has this kind of, I guess, force field, if you can even call it that, that basically not exactly disables people with powers, but it kind of sends a wave of energy that weakens them. So anyone who's like overpowered starts feeling, you know, a little less, you know, it doesn't affect humans as much. It's kind of like a whole thing with like frequency, like where others aren't affected as much as, you know, some would be. Maybe something like, I don't know, like with his hearing, you know, like Superboy's hearing is like that of a dog's, you know, it's so sensitive, so powerful, you know, whatever. Anyways, so Ronan decides to go rogue. Starro eventually takes control of everyone in General Swan's headquarters. Starro uses General Swan's army to go after more test subjects, who are now mind-controlled, of course, and Superboy and Deathstroke try to warn everyone in Capital City about the starfish. With Ronan's assistance, Starro learns more about the human race and realizes it must be changed for the quote-unquote better. Using Ronan as a vessel, the two become one and the same, a thinker. Starro then takes control over Capital City's prisons and its prisoners. Now Starro isn't just controlling the people Superboy fought against, but also literal monsters Superboy suffered to put away. Fortunately, still kicking, Superboy and Deathstroke devise a plan to stop Starro, aka destroy something on the outside, you gotta go inside. Starro eventually takes control of Superboy, commanding the Boy of Steel to retrieve the other half of his power from Kellex, the power that originally was bestowed to Lana. Unfortunately, this causes Superboy's subconscious to be invaded by Lana's, aka Dark Supergirls. Still trying to get through Supergirl, and of course Superboy, Lana and Lois coincidentally work together without knowing to get Superboy back on the side of good. Meanwhile, Starro feeds off Rodan's immaculate intelligence. Sooner than later, Superboy regains control of his subconscious, but he also has to regain control of his whole body. With the help of Lana on the inside and, once again, Lois on the outside, he may just be able to do so. Meanwhile, Daily Planet's Perry White and Jimmy Olsen arrive to get scoops. With his friends still under Starro's control, Superboy now tries to find another weakness of Starro's. Meanwhile, Slade stumbles upon Perry and Jimmy's investigation. The three decide to explore more about General Swan's other projects, including Project S. They discover Swan had an accomplice helping him out, a woman named Amanda Waller, or, as her enemies know her, Mandy. The cliffhanger ending and or big reveal of the season and or slash the sixth season finale ending, for lack of a better metaphor, is Andy slept with the enemy. So now, what do you think of my theorized version of Superboy Season 6? Fast, right? Should Deathstroke have been introduced earlier, later, or not at all in the series? Should Amanda Waller have been her own boss rather than a spy, like in the comics? Was Starro a good enough villain for Superboy to combat against? Once again, I say, you can express any similar opinions to me through my Instagram account at Denny.pivach, that's D-E-N-I, period, P-I-V-A-C, no capitalization, no spaces, that's all. Now, on to the seventh season premiere. Continuing right where the sixth season left off, Slade and his new friends travel to Amanda Waller's home. They wish to interrogate her, but discover she's being held hostage. Meanwhile, Superboy gets the flashback on his side, and the two try to do as much quote-unquote damage control as Starro's army decreases, Superboy's increases. One more fight will determine it all. That's the final fight, that final fight being Superboy versus Starro. This several-parter finale and or premiere ends as, I mean, this is both the finale and the premiere because it continues after, you know, season 6 and goes on to leaks into season 7. Anyways, it ends as Superboy goes to the space-time continuum using a device created by Schuster University's Professor Peterson, who was played by George Chakiris during the show's first and second season. I think he also made an appearance in the fourth, but I'm not quite sure. Quick fun fact, gushing moment, of course, even though I said I wouldn't, just really quickly and really briefly. If that actor's name, George Chakiris, sounds familiar, it's because he played gang leader Bernardo in 1961's film adaptation of West Side Story. I was obsessed with both the movies and musical for the entire month of April. Like, I couldn't help but repeatedly sing Dear Officer Krupke. And I know the whole story behind the Jets and what they eventually become near the end of the film, but that's still an entertaining song, and much of the other songs are entertaining, and I found the whole story just really bright and enjoyable and colorful and just amazing, like freaking amazing. And I can also perform the dance numbers too. Anywho, Superboy can't make the final blow. He believes Starro could still do some good and decides to give the alien a second chance. A post-credits scene reveals an all-new hero, Flamebird, looking over Clark and Lois walking through the city, seemingly happily ever after. Clark, Lois, Oliver, and Zatanna then attend a charity event hosted by Bruce Wayne. The charity event soon turns into a heist when a couple of crooks posing as heroes begin stealing money. With heroes' reputations being ruined, there's only one true one who could stop it. Flamebird. Now, if you aren't familiar with that character, you should know Clark Kent and Jimmy Olsen became a rather dynamic duo in the Golden Age comics, known as Nightwing and Flamebird. Though Nightwing now is more popular and associated with the Batman franchise, he was originally a Kryptonian. I mean, technically Clark was, and he just picked another superhero name so the civilians of Kandor wouldn't mistake him. Unfortunately, this new iteration of Flamebird becomes more aggressive, and so does Clark. The two confront each other and decide to let emotions do most of the fighting. Meanwhile, Jimmy hits it off with a new reporter, Jeremy Teagan. However, when Jimmy's in danger, again, Jeremy decides to put a certain theory to the test. A certain theory that Lex put in the beginning of season 5. After those shenanigans, stranger things are happening around Capital City until daytime. Those who see it are believed to be crazy, but when Lois becomes one of those people, Superboy must find out what's really going on. It turns out there's a metahuman, and when asleep, their dreams come true. Zatanna and her superhero cousin Gypsy battle each other from within, while Superboy and Vibe battle each other on the outside of a space-time continuum. Vibe, Gypsy's fiancé, is trying to help and or protect his lover from someone much worse, his ex-girlfriend, Reacher. This episode would have served as a special/filler episode, on account that it would have aired around Halloween. After that, Perry White's close friend named George is suffering from PTSD after last episode's series of events. Everyone in Capital City has also become split about this. Some believe it was all an illusion and others are going crazy, while the crazy ones believe everyone else is not saying enough. Amanda Waller also returns to Capital City to exact revenge on Superboy for the loss of her family and friends, Matt, Andy, Rodan, etc., those who died because of Starro's reign. As George becomes more paranoid, he also becomes more dangerous. Superboy considers wiping George's memory, thinking it's for his own good. However, Oliver explains when he got his memory altered once how much it damaged him. Superboy has now been given more questions than answers. Lex has also somehow discovered Superboy's power transferring process and gained a set of his own. His only wish is to finally destroy Superboy for taking away everything good from him. Meanwhile, an all-new gang called the Troublesome Trio look more into Amanda Waller's recent personal affairs. A few episodes later, Lex is reminiscing about how he hoped long ago for Superboy's death. Now, he's asking the Boy of Steel for his own? Apparently, after Lex's powers were removed, his body didn't take so kindly and manifested an illness. The illness is slowly killing Lex. The ending, which was bittersweet, I believe, has Superboy locking Lex up in the Fortress of Solitude. He's cryogenically frozen, but in a cliffhanging twist, an old new villain named Mongol arrives and places an alien called Black Mercy onto Lex and Superboy, causing them to get knocked out. Mongal, Mongol's daughter, teams up with Superboy's allies to stop Mongol from colliding his world with Earth. Unfortunately, it happens, and Mongol possesses Mongal. Now the two have become one, and they plan to use another alien species against the Boy of Steel. They believe it could corrupt him even further. Under the control of Black Mercy, Superboy dreams of a world he's familiar with, but has never truly been to. He's back on Krypton. His birth parents are alive. His brother and best friend is Lex Luthor, or, as his Kryptonian name is pronounced, XL. Get it? It's Lex, spelled backwards, XL. But it's also Superboy's family name, like Kal-El and Jor-El. Well, apparently, Kal-El is about to get married to a Kryptonian woman named Ursa. Though we have come far past Season 7's mid-season finale, I'd like to note each and every episode from Season 7 and Season 8 of Superboy is a two-parter. Given that each season holds 24 episodes, that means Season 7 and 8 really have 12 episodes. Anyways, still under the control of Black Mercy, Superboy tries to remember who he really is, or was at least. Lex does the same, but faster. Sacrificing himself in the end, Lex helps Superboy out of purgatory, or at least his, leaving Lex and Black Mercy to disintegrate. Now, there's only the matter of what is Mongol's next move. Deathstroke and Superboy travel to Cuba to rescue an old friend of Oliver's that could help Superboy find Mongal. His name? John Constantine. Occupation? Working-class warlock, con man, and part-time occult detective on the side. However, the task is not as easy as Oliver described. Not only are Superboy and Deathstroke up against pirates, but they also must defeat a demon, which the pirates are trying to contact. Truly is a magically bad day for all, I frickin' guess. With the introduction of John Constantine and also the Teen Titans, who are rather referenced than shown, Superboy and his newly acquired team of superheroes decide to defeat Trigon, the demon that the pirates summoned. Trigon's daughter, Raven, decides to open a portal to Trigon's world, and from inside, she and Superboy's other allies are willing to destroy what can't come out. After the destruction of Trigon's world, the explosion causes a sonic boom that ruptures both the Fortress of Solitude and the Phantom Zone, giving a signal to Zod and his new Legion of Doom, including Brainiac, to return to Earth. Then, Superboy discovers that Brainiac was the reason Krypton was destroyed. Superboy decides to go beast mode and break the rules. The two fight to the death until Superboy sends Brainiac flying to a meteorite. It caused an explosion, sending shards into the Kent's farm, destroying Superboy's adoptive family. Both his worlds and or birthplaces destroyed, Superboy gets dark. I'm not just talking about the character. Superboy is broken. He's lost his family, many friends, and even hope. Unfortunately, General Zod takes a step further. He tries to finish what Brainiac started, the death of all Kryptonians. Starting with Superboy, he ends up fighting against one of his own, Ursa. The ending has Ursa, who was once Zod's companion, helping Superboy defeat General Zod, but in doing so, sacrifices herself in the process. After Clark's parents passing, Clark must suck it up and fight another battle, a legal battle. Clark against his parents' true flesh and blood, aka their own families, to retrieve a deed that could reveal his identity, a deed to the Kent's house, of course. Eventually, Clark wins, but gives most of the money he inherited to his struggling relatives. All he wants is for people to think he's a mild-mannered Midwestern reporter. Now, though a filler, this is a rather interesting episode. This episode tells the story of Superboy's ally, Deadman, and how they met, and what happened before then. In 1952, Boston Brand was a well-known athlete at Smallville High. However, when he got harassed by a couple of jocks and thrown into a vat of chemicals, he became something more. He became Deadman. flashback shows Boston returning to wreak havoc on the last remaining person who had something to do with his murder. At least, the last remaining descendant of said person, Clark Kent. Could Clark's father have been responsible for such a murder? The ending actually reveals Clark's father, Jonathan, tried to prevent Boston's murder, but got beat up for trying to be a hero. Dead Man forgives and forgets. Flash forward to present day. Mongol returns with an all-new Black Mercy. The two have combined powers and became an unstoppable, fear-inducing machine. However, their power is so strong that it's literally scaring the people of Capital City to death. Superboy must find a way to stop Mongol before he scares everyone in the world to death. There's a twist ending for this season finale. Though, before Mongol and Black Mercy and or Merciless Mongol's death, they induce Superboy not with fear, but a premonition of what's to come. The War of the Century. The Multiversal War. After seeing his supposed future, Superboy wishes he had never arrived in Smallville. And a mystical creature known only as the Candlemaker makes that happen. Adapting the 2003 comic book miniseries Superman Red Son, Superboy's new timeline reveals him crash landing in Mother Russia, where he's groomed to become a weapon to be used against America. Though Superboy remembers his other life, he prefers to live out this one than experience the destruction of the one that Mongol foretold. Eventually, Dr. Fate, an old acquaintance of Constantine's, arrives and convinces Superboy to keep on fighting for his original timeline, not as a boy or an alien, but as a symbol. From then on, Superboy became Superman. Another speller, of course, special plus filler, comes up with supervillainous duo Silver Banshee and Livewire teaming up to defeat Superman. With their powers combined, they create shockwaves that are powerful enough to take out a whole city block's electricity. Without electricity, there's no one else to call but the Man of Steel. Superman also asks for some assistance from the Flash, aka Jay Garrick, Barry Allen's mentor. Meanwhile, a group of JLE members, Justice Legion of Earth, have been looking over mysterious deaths. Superboy-powered detective The Question theorizes an alien life form is behind it. However, it's much closer to home. Darla, who is played by Tracy Roberts from Superboy Season 2 to 4, breaks out a group of highly advanced gorillas, Ultra Humanite, Titano the Super Ape, etc., recovering Dr. Smilson's work on Metallo, and eliminates everyone affiliated with Intergang. Why? Because she plans to create an all-new Legion of Doom, Legion 2.0, to defeat the Justice Legion of Earth. Superman and Aquaman then team up to defeat, yet again, Aquaman's arch-nemesis, Black Manta. After going up against Silver Banshee, Superman may have lost his super hearing. Now, he must rely on Martian Manhunter to take his place as Capital City's number one protector. Hawkgirl and the Green Lantern in training, Jessica Cruz, are also in quite a steamy relationship. However, when Hawkman puts his destiny over desire, Hawkgirl must choose between the girl of her dreams and the man from her memories. Clark has ever so slightly recovered from his deafness to help out with a similar issue happening to Jimmy and Jeremy. Also, Swamp Thing, Plastic Man, and Animal Man go on a stakeout together to prevent Darla from polluting Capital City's water supply. Since marrying Maxwell Lord and obtaining her powers again, she could be Superboy and JLE's new greatest threat. However, Dr. Fate says differently. And now, my fellow fans, we've finally reached the Season 8 finale, previously considered the series finale of Superboy. This 10-parter finale begins with Superboy explaining to the JLE about his multiversal war premonition. They don't take it well, considering they now have to rely on Legion 2.0 to help them defeat an alien named Darkseid and his even greater army. Once Darkseid arrives in Capital City with a few of his demonic goons, they quote-unquote rough the place up a bit. Meanwhile, other JLE members are saying their prayers and farewells to family and friends. After that, Dr. Fate explains to Superman that if the two combine their powers, they could be able to retain the blast from the Mother Box. However, it could kill both superheroes in the process. The series finale has the Flash against Reverse Flash, Aquaman against Black Manta, Wonder Woman against Cheetah, and almost every other superhero is up against their arch-nemesis. However, Superman isn't up against his. Darkseid keeps pounding Superman to the ground like a rag doll. His enormous size and power seem to be no match for the Man of Steel. However, As an homage and recreation of the famous scene in Justice League Unlimited's season finale, which was an animated series in the early 2000s, Superman gives the strongest punch in the multiverse, the super punch, if you will, shattering Darkseid. As the Mother Box is ready to blow, Flash reminds Superman about their constantly postponed race. Like Jay said, no time like the present. The two run at high speeds in opposite directions of Earth. They super punch the Mother Box, causing an enormous explosion, but without any hesitation, restart their universe. And that's where I'll leave Superboy for today. Tune in next week, where I'll have a compilation including Superboy's continuation, Tobey Maguire's new Spider-Man, and a rather more phenomenal origin story. I hope those who tuned in enjoyed my theorizations and whatnot. I know I did. Once again, I'm Denny Pivach, and you have been listening to Only Murderers in the Writer's Room.